Republicans are looking at this from the point of view of how do they protect their own interests as part of the calculation here. And so when you're looking at the more conversation about what Donald Trump did, that's probably not helpful to Donald Trump.
Impeachment moves to the U.S. Senate where just about anything might happen. It's Friday, January 17th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, the U.S.-China trade war, not over yet, lying the U.S. into the Afghan war, and rescue dogs from around the world. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Our top story today, the U.S. Senate on Thursday took control of the impeachment case against President Donald Trump. Democrats from the House of Representatives Wednesday night carried the formal articles of impeachment over to the Senate, setting the stage for only the third trial to remove a president in American history. Just a few hours ago, the federal government's watchdog agency, the White House, I should say, violated the law when it withheld military aid to the Ukraine, which is at the heart of the impeachment case. The president Wednesday night said that the case was a, quote, hoax, even as fresh details emerged about his efforts in Ukraine. With the swearing in by Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, the Senate has now transformed itself into an impeachment court. Even as Republicans who control the chamber, the White House, and Democrats argue over the process. Earlier, VOA's Jason Patinkin spoke with Stephen Farnsworth, political science professor at University of Mary Washington, about what comes next.
The next few days will involve working through some of the questions of procedure. What format will this impeachment process take shape? The actual arguments themselves will take place probably on Tuesday of the next week, the 21st. And from then on, you can expect probably in the range of a couple of weeks of conversation where the senators have to sit quietly and listen to the arguments for and against the impeachment. And then after that or along the way, individual motions may take place that may totally change this process from where it started.
Now, looking into the procedures that will be discussed in the next few days, one of the sticking points is about witnesses, who will be called, how that will happen. What should we expect to see in that regard?
Well, it's clear that the Democrats want witnesses, but the Republicans are in the majority in the Senate, and so unless the Democrats can convince a handful of Republicans to go along with the call for more witnesses, the conversation could be as abbreviated as just simply hearing the case by the Democratic House managers and the president's defense team, and no witnesses at all. The pressure for witnesses has been the reason why Nancy Pelosi has held off moving the articles of impeachment to the Senate until this week. But the truth is that as long as there's a majority of Republicans who say no witnesses, there will be no witnesses.
Now, why wouldn't there be witnesses? Generally, in most trials, witnesses are a key feature.
Well, the Republicans are looking at this because impeachment is more a political process than a legal one. The Republicans are looking at this from the point of view of how do they protect their own interests as part of the calculation here. And so when you're looking at the more conversation about what Donald Trump did, that's probably not helpful to Donald Trump. And so if you look at what the White House wants right now, they want a very abbreviated trial. They would love to have this as short as possible, maybe even less than the 2 weeks tentatively looking to be the plan, but certainly not witnesses. And if witnesses are called, well, then it could become a free-for-all very rapidly because there are some Republicans who say that if they're going to be witnesses, then, you know, maybe Joe Biden, the presidential candidate, his son Hunter Biden, might be part of the witness list. And so it could move very quickly away from what President Trump did do or did not do, and that could be a problem. What's clear for the Republicans, though, is that the support for Donald Trump among Republicans, it remains very high. And so any Republican who wants to side with the Democrats may face significant pushback from Republican voters and from their reelection prospects.
Now, there have been two different updates in the last day or so on the Ukraine case. The Government Accountability Office has said that there was a violation of the law in holding up the assistance to Ukraine. Will that statement potentially impact the Senate trial?
Well, it's part of the evidence that the House managers will likely include in their presentation of evidence for why Donald Trump should be removed from office. It'll be part of the conversation, but how seriously it is taken depends on the individual senators themselves as they look at the evidence and decide what matters to them and what doesn't. I think the key guide to how this story ends can be seen in public approval numbers. As long as President Trump's approval ratings are on the high side of 35, and he's never been much below 40, he should be okay. President Trump has had very, very fixed public opinion numbers, and the deep reservoir of support he has among Republicans really creates a very, very secure position, because in order for President Trump to be removed from office, two-thirds of the senators, that is close to 20 Republicans, would have to agree that he should not serve as president. And that seems very, very unlikely unless President Trump's approval rating becomes really, really negative. And then the senators might very well think that Trump is more trouble than he's worth.
Great. Thank you so much, Stephen, for coming on our show today.
Oh, sure thing. Have a good one.
Stephen Farnsworth of the University of Mary Washington speaking with our Jason Patinkin. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. The Chinese government is applauding an interim trade agreement with the U.S., but cautions the two countries must still address key concerns of mutual concern. India on Thursday asked China to avoid raising the Kashmir dispute at the United Nations Security Council, insisting it is a bilateral matter between India and Pakistan. The UN's top court says it will decide next week on whether emergency measures should be imposed on Myanmar over alleged genocide. And Pakistan announced Thursday that the Taliban is ready to reduce violence in Afghanistan. Read and watch more on VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter, plus voanews.com. Now on VOA Asia, a top Pentagon watchdog has told U.S. lawmakers that there was incentive for U.S. officers and military commanders to lie about the progress of America's war in Afghanistan. John Sopko, the special investigator for Afghanistan Reconstruction, testified before House lawmakers on Wednesday. His appearance comes 1 month after a bombshell report by the Washington Post claiming that officials misled the public about the war from the beginning. VOA's Jesusime Oni has more.
Spanning nearly two decades and multiple administrations, the Afghanistan war is the longest in U.S. history. Okay. Members of Congress say there are lessons to be learned.
A lack of coordination, the misuse of funds, and insufficient training for Afghans has failed to reduce violence across the country. This is completely unacceptable.
More than 24 American service members have died since the U.S. and coalition partners invaded Afghanistan in 2001. The conflict has cost Washington nearly $1 trillion. John Sopko, inspector general of an independent government watchdog created by Congress to combat waste and abuse in the U.S. reconstruction effort in Afghanistan, told the House Foreign Affairs Committee on Wednesday a persistent incentive to lie about the progress on the ground hurt U.S. efforts in Afghanistan.
You create from the bottom up an incentive because of short time frames. You're there for 6 months, 9 months, or a year to show success. That gets reported up the chain, and before you know it, the president is talking about a success that doesn't exist. And I think that's a good issue to look at, not whether there was lying, but why.
The hearing comes 1 month after a Washington Post report that government officials misled the public about U.S. gains in Afghanistan for years and hid evidence that the war had become unwinnable. The newspaper cited CGAR documents as evidence. But Richard Boucher, who served as Assistant Secretary of State for South Asia during the Bush administration, says there was no deliberate deception.
I think all of us tried to tell the truth in terms of what was going on in the war, the difficulties that we were facing, the difficulties of getting things done in a chaotic situation like the one in Afghanistan.
Analysts say the main objective of the war, to get rid of al-Qaeda, was met quickly. But flaws in the U.S. strategy to prevent resurgence of extremist groups slowed efforts in the region.
The idea that if we just came up with a better plan, a better strategy, a better training program, that somehow we could create in Afghanistan the kind of government that we saw as competent, capable, and therefore of capable of winning popular support and ensuring stability. I think that was partly based on an unrealistic view of the country and the people there and how it worked.
Despite notable failures, experts say a rash exit from the region could lead to deadlier outcomes.
We're at a stage where we know we want to withdraw, but we want to do it responsibly, and that requires a negotiation process.
The Trump administration has been negotiating a peace agreement with the Taliban to finally bring the war to an end. Jesus Amelny, VOA News, Washington.
And that was VOA's Jesus Amelny reporting. In the U.S., more than 3 million shelter animals are adopted every year. But if you can't find the animal you've been waiting for at your local shelter, or even nationally, you can look even further afield. Svetlana Prudovskaya met with people who make these little miracles happen. Anna Rice narrates her story.
Jenny Patrick believes that if you make a wish, it is bound to come true.
We had dogs growing up, we've had pets, but I wanted something on my own. I wanted my own dog to just come home to and, you know, just, I wanted something to be responsible for, give me something to motivate me.
Patrick started to look for a dog online and stumbled upon the website of Furry Tales International, a group of volunteers run by three women, Natalia Lugavskaya-Fedorovskaya, Maya Torgeson, and Larisa Gusovsky, who made saving the millions of shelter dogs through international pet adoptions their life's work. The organization mostly works with Russia, and the more Patrick looked at the pictures of abandoned animals, the clearer she understood this was exactly what she needed to do.
I don't know how or I don't know why, but I kept going back to Hannah's profile. And, like, she just had this, like, adorable little face and, you know, I read her profile and it, like, just being rescued from a mass shooting of stray dogs, just, it breaks your heart.
10-month-old Hannah was rescued from an alleged mass shooting of stray dogs in one of the shelters in the south of Russia. Yelena Gladkaya is a member of a Moscow dog rescue team. She took Hannah to the vet, walked with the frightened pet, fed her nutritious food, and gave her something Hannah has never encountered before, love and care. However, the woman couldn't keep Hannah. There were many other dogs that needed her. That's how Hannah's profile appeared on the website of Furry Tales International.
I saw Hannah's story, so I literally just, right then and there, I just emailed Furry Tales, and Larissa wrote me back.
After some back and forth, Patrick got in touch with Maya, who has helped find 77 Russian dogs for Rever Homes in the U.S. over the past 3 years.
We had the home interview set up. That Saturday, Larissa was over, who was fantastic. She and I just, we sat at this table for like an hour again, just going back and forth with our stories.
Patrick was approved, and Hannah traveled to the U.S. from Moscow. After hours on a transatlantic plane, she finally walked into a place that would be her forever home.
I was tearing up, like I was crying. I was so excited. And she comes out, and she's this petite little, like, princess already. And she just puts her little head in my hands, and I'm like, it was love at first sight.
This year marked the first holiday season Patrick and Hannah spent together, the first of many happy memories the dog and her loving owner will create over the years to come. For Svetlana Prudovskaya in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
And that is VOA Asia for today and for this week, a very busy news week. But fear not, we'll be back again on Monday. We hope you'll join us then as well. Until then, have a great weekend and be well.